Chapter 4. The Stone and the Elixir. In 1526, Agrippa wrote to a friend, "Blessed be the Lord, I am a rich man, if there be truth in fable. A man of consideration, long my friend, has brought me seeds of gold and planted them over my furnace within long-necked flasks, putting underneath a little fire as of the sun's heat, and as hens brood over eggs, we keep the warmth up night and day, expecting forthwith to produce enormous golden chicks. If all be hatched, we shall exceed Midas in wealth, or at least in length of years." This humorously deprecating attitude to alchemy was not shared by governments and kings, who pursued the search for gold with relentless enthusiasm. In the late 16th century, the Senate of Venice hired a Cypriot alchemist to restore the Republic's crumbling finances, but without success. Charles II of England built an alchemical laboratory underneath his bedchamber, heedless of the violent explosions which were often the only tangible results of alchemical operations. James IV of Scotland employed an intrepid alchemist who not only tried to make gold unsuccessfully, but also attempted to fly in the air with a pair of feathered wings. He took off from the battlements of Stirling Castle, dropped like a stone, and broke his leg. He explained that he failed because his wings included hen's feathers, which naturally coveted the midden, not the sky. Coins were made from alchemical gold for Christian IV of Denmark in the 1640s, and several other monarchs struck similar coins and medals. In 1675, an alchemist converted both copper and tin into gold in the presence of the Emperor Leopold I, and 2 years later the same adept turned a silver medallion into gold. Examined in 1888, this medallion was found to have a specific gravity between that of gold and silver. The alchemist's supreme goal was to make the Philosopher's Stone, which was believed to have the power of turning all things to gold. J.B. van Helmont, a 17th-century chemist and the inventor of the term gas, described the stone in his De Vita Aeterna. Quote, "I have seen and handled more than once the stone of the philosophers. In color, it was like powder of saffron, but heavy and shining, even as powdered glass. There was given to me, on a certain occasion, the fourth part of a grain, or the 600th of an ounce. Having wrapped it in paper, I made projection therewith upon 8 ounces of quicksilver heated in a crucible, and immediately all the quicksilver, having made a little noise, was congealed into a yellow mass. This being melted in a strong fire, I found 8 ounces minus 11 grains of most pure gold." Unquote. Helvetius, a distinguished authority on medicine, was skeptical of alchemy, unlike van Helmont. In 1666, he was visited by a stranger who showed him 3 small lumps of the stone, each about the bigness of a small walnut, transparent, of a pale brimstone color. After much persuasion, the stranger gave Helvetius a tiny piece of this material. When he complained that the piece was too small, the stranger cut it in two and gave him back only half of it. After the stranger had gone, Helvetius wrapped the stone in wax and heated it in a crucible with 1/2 ounce of lead. He doubted whether anything would happen, but within 1/4 hour the lead had turned into gold, which was tested and found to be of good quality. These accounts are clarity itself compared to the descriptions of the stone given by most alchemists. They say it is something which exists everywhere in nature, but is generally regarded as worthless. It is made of animal, vegetable, and mineral. It has a body, a soul, and a spirit. It grows from flesh and blood. It is made of fire and water. It is a stone, but it is not a stone. Unknown, yet known to everyone. Despised, and yet unimaginably precious. Coming from God, but not coming from God. Directions for making it are couched in various types of symbolic code. "Bind the serf twice and imprison him thrice," says a book ascribed to the 13th-century alchemist and astrologer Arnald of Villanova. "Put him once in whitest linen, and, if he is inobedient, incarcerate him again. Make him receive himself. On the 3rd night give him a white wife, and he will impregnate her, and thus she will give birth to 30 sons who will overcome their genitor. The Rosicrucian alchemist Michael Meyer, who died in 1622, said, "From a man and a woman make a circle, then a square, then a triangle, finally a circle, and you will obtain the philosopher's stone." The alchemists wrapped their processes in veils of mystery which frequently confused other alchemists, and which make much of their art still impenetrable because the processes were mystical as well as chemical. Alchemy is often treated as a largely imbecile prelude to modern chemistry, but this is its least interesting side. The stone did not only turn metals to gold, it was also the spiritual transformation of man from a state of earthly impurity to one of heavenly perfection. Some alchemists never went near a laboratory and scorned the attempt to make gold as mere money-grubbing. But many of those who labored hopefully over furnaces and stills believed that the stone could be made only by one who had achieved a profound understanding of the inner mysteries of the universe. These mysteries could not be stated in plain language, even if the risk of revealing them to the unworthy was discounted. They could only be conveyed through symbolism and allegory, and the full richness of their significance could only be grasped through mystical experience.